Coming up on the Hockey News pregame show, is it time to make changes to 3-on-3 overtime?
Arizona Coyotes relocation rumors, Utah, Houston, or Stand Pat?
And joining us remotely, we've got New York Rangers correspondent Stan Fischler on one of the hottest teams in the East.
I'm Ryan Kennedy.
I'm Michael Trakos, and this is the Hockey News pregame show, brought to you by BetMGM and NorthlandHockey.com. What's up, hockey fans? Welcome to the Hockey News pregame show. I'm Michael Trakos. With me, as always, is Ryan Kennedy. How you doing today, Ryan?
Pretty good.
Yeah, so the NHL GM meetings are happening in Florida right now. A lot of news coming out of these meetings. Where do you want to start? You want to start 3-on-3 overtime and what the GMs were saying about that today?
Yeah, so it's interesting because there's been a lot of talk lately about 3-on-3 overtime because, you know, in the past, I would say a couple of years, teams have really adapted to, the pace. They've really sort of slowed it down. You see guys circling out of the offensive zone.
Passing the puck back to goalies a lot.
Yeah, possession is everything. But for me, you know, people say, oh, do we need to fix 3-on-3 overtime? Toronto and Carolina on Saturday night, that was an amazing 3-on-3 overtime where you had chances going both ways. And, you know, these are two top-notch teams, so it's not like you were seeing, like, sloppy play. It was just good teams trying to get that extra point, and ironically, it ended up going to a shootout. But I worry if you toss in some new rules, it's going to get a little confusing, a little stilted. I know there's been talk about like an over and back kind of rule like they have in basketball. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's something you can throw in, and as long as...
So what, you cross the red line, you can't go back again?
Yeah, exactly.
I like that.
Yeah. But again, I do worry about the flow where at least initially you're going to get guys do it by accident, and then it's like, oh, I don't remember, I forgot that rule or whatever. Part of me thinks it's fine as it is. What do you think?
Well, the league said leave it alone. Mm-hmm. And they backed it up by saying 70% of, you know, games that go into overtime are ending with the 3-on-3. They're not going to the shootout. So I think if you're a person who's anti-shootout, which it seems like that crowd is just getting louder and louder.
Right.
Where they're just like, enough of the shootout. We don't want to end the game that way.
It was never a big seller to begin with.
No, maybe the first year.
Yeah.
When we saw like
Merrick Malik
go between the legs, and we saw like Datsyuk every night seem like trying a different sort of move.
Right.
But now, you know, games are ending with the 3-on-3, and I see the point of, you know, one team gets possession and it's like they never give up possession.
Right.
Until they either score or there's, you know,
maybe
a big
save. Maybe there's a
whistle. Or a whistle, I guess. I'm okay with it. I'm okay with this sort of, you know, regrouping, passing it back to the tender. Because eventually you do get a nice scoring opportunity. And people saying that, you know, coaches are ruining the 3-on-3. This is their MO that, you know, slow it down and don't give up possession. I almost feel like if I was a player, this is the style I'd play also.
Uh-huh.
Like, I don't want to be chasing. And then we eventually get, you know, what eventually comes of it is, you know, it's slow, it's slow, slow, and then it ramps up again.
Yeah, you get those. Once there's one chance, if it's not buried, then it's going back the other way.
Yeah, like, because you eventually get tired, and then, you know, you're not going to backcheck.
Mistakes are made.
So I kind of like it. I would leave it as is. What I would do is just completely get rid of the shootout and just extend the 3-on-3.
Yep.
So right now, what is it, 5 minutes?
Five.
Make it 10.
Sure. Or even as a compromise, you could go 7 because players do get tired. But then you have to adjust again in terms of your bench. You would get some of the less skilled players going out there, and maybe you get a matchup that's favorable to your team where you get you get sort of first line guys going against third or fourth line guys, and you get the advantage, and then you score. Or you get some tired first liners and some fresh fourth liners, and the fourth liners prevail. Who knows?
Fourth liners never see the ice 3-on-3.
Pretty much never.
And same thing with shootout. That is the issue.
Yeah.
It's always the same old, you know, top line guys, and then maybe the second line guys, and then that's it.
Maybe you get a shutdown guy. I noticed the Leafs will put out like David Kampf.
Mm.
You know, just to have one guy out there that's kind of thinking defense.
No, I have no issue with it. The other thing that was talked about was reviews. Colin Campbell with league management said, you know, there's a frustration over the delays. The fact that it's taken 5 to 6 minutes to kind of get a call right. Mm-hmm. I think this is a non-issue because, you know, once you open up the can of worms, that is, you know, video review, whether it's baseball, whether it's football, whether it's hockey, you know, you're now in that point now where everyone is seeing multiple reviews and seeing multiple replays and different camera angles. So that's going to take a lot of time. And the worst thing is on the ice, they make a decision that doesn't square with the viewer at home and saying, no, I saw that extra view.
Right.
And that puck definitely went in, or that skate was definitely offside. So I don't think you can shorten the process. If anything, this is just going to get, you know, longer and longer as we get more camera angles.
Well, it's funny because that's the point I was going to bring up, going the opposite way. More cameras, or we're going to continue to get better cameras, right? Like, I'm sure the ones they have right now are incredible, top of the line. Like, who knows how much they cost. But technology only gets better and better as time goes on. So sure. If we have, you know, more angles, and, you know, if you think about the way that arenas are constructed, if you think about just the technology that's out there, if you can get better angles, like, I don't know, maybe not drones per se, but something that would give you a better angle of something with, like, even crisper imaging, then maybe it's not 5-6 minutes. Maybe it is only 1 minute where it's like, okay, well, you know, we have a program that tells us the best angle or gives us, you know, the multiple angles right in real time where we can see them all. Maybe it only takes 1-2 minutes. I think that would obviously be the best case scenario because long reviews just kill momentum. And, you know, as much as I like the college game, I know, you know, in past Frozen Fours, like, they will review any potential hit to the head.
Okay.
And, you know, some of them aren't injuries or anything like that because they are full cages and things like that. And, yeah, head injuries are serious. But I remember one game where there was, like, 3 reviews for hits to the head in one game. And every review was, like, 6-7 minutes long. That makes for a long game when you're tacking on all that extra time just to figure out if something is a 5-minute major or a 2-minute penalty, things like that. And, again, it's important, but in terms of flow of the game, like, imagine that in an NHL game, right? Like, I'm sure the concession stand people would be happy, but otherwise, like, I don't think the TV people would be too happy about that.
You watch tennis at all?
Very little.
Okay, so tennis, they have what it's called, like, Hawkeye technology.
Right.
Where literally it's like if you challenge, they go right to the screen, and everyone within the stadium can watch on their giant screen, and it's like an animation of the tennis ball bouncing either in or out of the service box or out of bounds. And it's like you get the whole crowd go, it happens literally within seconds.
There you go.
So I don't know.
That's what you strive for.
Yeah, so I don't know why they can't just get that same technology and put it here.
Yeah.
I know in the past the NHL has talked about, you know, fitting the actual puck in with a
microchip or something.
Yeah, and obviously that's going to be crazy costly.
Yeah,
because in tennis, if the ball does go out of bounds, yeah, you usually ask for that back.
Yeah, yeah.
Good luck trying to get a puck back.
Yeah, really.
So that's another thing that they, you know, it seems like there is a path forward to this. But yeah, you're right. Like, the more reviews, it just eats it up. And the thing I dislike, and I don't know how much this was discussed, but, you know, we get an offside challenge that happened like 2 or 3 minutes before the actual goal was scored.
Right.
And it's like, when was the offside? What happened there? I can't remember what game that happened to last week where I think it might have been the Leafs where there was like a hand pass. And I think Bertuzzi got his goal called back. And I was like, where was the hand pass? And it was like, oh, like a minute before the actual goal was scored.
Yeah, Bertuzzi wasn't even on the ice when it happened.
Yeah, so
he joined on the rush.
Okay, so one of the fun things that actually happened at the GM meetings, or announced at the GM meetings, reported on, what have you, Will, An NHL behind the scenes series is being floated on, similar to the Netflix series like Drive to Survive for F1 or Full Swing for golf or Breakpoint for tennis. More of a behind the scenes look at the players and their personalities. I know the NHL's done this so many times with like the Road to the Winter Classic.
Yeah.
I love the, you know, when the NHL pulls back the curtain and we actually get to see, you know, players mic'd up, what happens on the bench, what happens in the dressing room. I love hearing coaches talk before a game. What do you make of this? Is this the kind of right move that's going to pull in maybe non-NHL fans?
Well, that's obviously the hope, right, is to get people that haven't watched a hockey game before and get them invested in these personalities. If you get buy-in, it's a great idea, right? Like, and you know, you talk about some of the top stars like Austin Matthews, Connor McDavid. I think Matthews is pretty well suited for it. We've seen him do a lot of stuff off the ice, commercials. I mean, McDavid does a lot of commercials too, don't get me wrong. But, you know, like how much of these guys' lives are they willing to put out there? And, you know, we're going to talk about some potential candidates here. I'll lead it off with Brent Burns. Like, Brent Burns to me is, like, perfect. Because for a casual fan, you'll say, look at this dude. He's, like, 6'5". He's got a huge beard. He carries a blender in his backpack. He's got all these animals. He's got all these tattoos. You know, he likes to go hunting.
Oh, yeah.
And he happens to be a top-notch defenseman on one of the best teams in the league. And a guy that's very comfortable on camera. So, to me, Brent Burns is the guy that becomes like almost that like mascot or totem for hockey, where it's like, this is a hockey player. They're not all like this. They don't all have 100 reptiles in their backyard. But, you know, this is a guy that like, you know, trains all summer, you know, on like beaches or in his RV or whatever. Like, he's got a whole story, a whole narrative. Like, it would not be hard to have a Brent Burns arc on that show.
You literally could do the whole show around Brent Burns.
You certainly could.
Okay, so I'm going to go, let's go back and forth here. So you go Burns with your first pick, almost like a must-have.
My first overall pick.
Yeah, I'm going to go Austin Matthews with a, he's got to be included in this. Not for the reasons that you mentioned with Burns, but just because, you know, American-born player, comes from the Sun Belt, mother is from Mexico. Dad grew up a baseball player. I think he was a college pitcher, if I recall correctly. You know, he plays for the Toronto Maple Leafs. Very interesting. Obviously, he hangs out with Justin Bieber sometimes.
Yep.
Like, you could just be like, okay, we're going to follow you, Austin, not during game time, but on the weekend.
Right.
And let's just kind of see what clubs you go to and who you're hanging out with. But,
I
think Austin Matthews has to be included because he very much is become the face of the NHL. Like, how many guys are rocking mustaches because of Matthews in the NHL these days?
Good point. Another top player in the NHL with my next pick, Nathan MacKinnon.
Oh, yeah.
In Colorado. And, you know, we were talking about this before the show.
Would he be down with it, though?
I think he would, yeah. And I think with MacKinnon, a lot of the interest will be with that famous discipline he has off the ice, right? The nutrition, just the training, the way, you know, you talk to anybody on the Avs or even outside the Avs, and they talk about, you know, his leadership and that drive that pulls guys into the fight with him, where it's like, yeah, you want to be at the same level or close to Nathan MacKinnon, because if he's putting in all that work as one of the best players in the league, we should probably be doing that too. And so, you know, it's not necessarily, you know, MacKinnon going to the clubs in Denver or anything like that, but it's like, what is his routine?
Yep.
How much work goes into becoming, you know, what could be the Hart Trophy winner this year? And, you know, perhaps what they even do with this show, maybe they follow a couple of guys from the same team. So, you know, in that respect, Colorado's great because you also have Cale Makar. Incredibly gifted, maybe a little on the quiet side, but, you know, decent personality there. You can also talk to Gabriel Landeskog. What was it like missing, like, 2 years of hockey when you should not only be in your prime, but, you know, you win the Stanley Cup, you hoist it, then you don't play that entire season afterwards. You don't play the entire regular season after that. You know, what was going on? That's your emotional arc right there. What did that mean for the captain of the Avs? So a Colorado thread all on its own would be pretty good.
Okay, so we got Burns, we got the colorful pick, we got Matthews, the popular pick, we got Nate Dogg, who's Mr. Captain Serious now, or I guess he's not even a captain, but Mr. Serious there.
Right.
I'm going to go Alex Ovechkin. His sure. pursuit of Wayne Gretzky's record, he's something like 50-some-odd goals away.
That's a good one.
Obviously, he's at a stage in his career where I think it's very interesting now. How does he keep himself in shape at the age that he's in?
Yeah.
How does he stay motivated? He's got a young kid now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm extremely interested in just kind of Alex Ovechkin, how he goes about his day. And also just, I talked to Steve Mayer a couple years ago. He's with the NHL. He puts on all
the big events.
Big events yeah. guy, All-Star Game, Winter Classic, Outdoor Games and all that. He floated the idea of doing sort of a, let's follow Ovechkin, and this was 2 years ago, as he's going for this pursuit of Gretzky's record.
Mm-hmm.
Similar, and he compared it to that Jordan documentary, The Last Dance.
Oh, yeah.
Where he's like, you know what, maybe we're not going to release this until like 5 years from now
right.
when he's retired. And then we kind of look back on that whole thing. And he's like, Alex was down for it. So I wonder if this was sort of the impetus for this sort of behind the scenes. But yeah, if they're doing it, Alex Ovechkin's got to be included just because, back in 2005-06, it was Ovechkin and Crosby's league. And
totally.
Even right now, you see what he's doing with the Capitals. Like, that Capitals team shouldn't be a playoff team. And he's single-handedly dragging them in, with his second half right now.
Yeah, him and Charlie Lindgren. That's
you want Charlie Lindgren in there?
Oh, not on the show. I'm saying Charlie Lindgren is dragging them into the playoffs.
I was going to say, I don't know how many people are going to be tuning in for Charlie Lindgren.
No, but for my final pick,
okay.
I'm going to say a goaltender. And Marc-Andre Fleury would be perfect, but who knows how much longer he will be playing, so that might... I mean, maybe it's okay if he's playing next year, where it's like, hey, if this is his swan song, that'd be great, because we know Fleury's got the tremendous personality, he's got the respect of everyone in the league. But if not him, then a Jake Ottinger or a Connor Hellebuck, an American who plays the position, and this would be more for the casual or new fan, where it's like the goaltender is completely different from everybody else on the team. They've got their own routines. They have their own skill sets. They have so much pressure on them. They tend to have sort of quirky personalities or like a very specific way of doing things.
Totally.
So I think, a top netminder, a Thatcher Demko would work as well. Somebody who's in that Vezina conversation. And it's more about the craft and just the mental side of the game that they need to have off the ice and on the ice for that matter, to be one of the best in that position.
Yeah, I really wish a guy like Brzgalov was still playing.
Right.
Just for that reason.
Totally.
Before we go off, move on from the NHL GMEs, last thing they talked about was puck over glass penalties.
Mm-hmm.
It's still a penalty. What do you think? Do you think you should get, like, one team should just get one puck over glass as a warning, and then after that it's a penalty? What do you think?
No, I love the puck over the glass penalty. You know why?
Why?
Because it's automatic. There's
it's
no
black and white, man.
It's black and white, and because there's refs, and we've seen it before. They get caught on mics where it's like they want to manage games.
Yeah.
They might not call a penalty in the third period that they would have called in the first. Puck over the glass, no one has a choice.
Yeah.
If there's 1 minute left in a one goal game and it's game seven of the Stanley Cup final and the puck goes over the glass, it's a penalty. There's nothing you can do about it, and I love that.
I covered the Carolina Hurricanes against the Buffalo Sabres. I think it was 2006 conference final where Brian Campbell famously went puck over glass and cost them the game.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen that heartbreak. The only thing I'm going to say to your kind of argument is at the end of the game, the ice is just destroyed.
Yeah.
That puck is bouncing. It's basically like a tennis ball. And I know these guys are skilled enough where you're like, okay, you should be able to control where the puck is because you can put the puck bar down in the net wherever
right.
you want. That being said, I almost feel like there's so much of a movement for at least making it a warning or, was it on purpose, was it not on purpose? I'm okay if they change that rule.
All right.
So
for me, it's no excuses.
All right.
Yep.
So Arizona, back in the news again. Mm-hmm. I feel like this is just the story that just will not go right away, Ryan.
Mm-hmm.
Now the Arizona Coyotes are in danger, possibly, of relocating if, they're auctioning off the parcel of land that you know, the new rink is going to be built on? When is this new rink ever going to be built?
Yeah.
What is your feeling on this? Because just kind of go over a little bit of the details here. So on Thursday, Arizona, this is last Thursday, Arizona State Land Development Board of Appeals approved a $68.5 million appraisal for a portion of land in North Phoenix. The land's got to be advertised for 10 weeks before any auction takes place. The auction's probably going to take place around mid-June. Obviously, the Coyotes want to, you know, find a home in North Phoenix. But if this doesn't work out and they get outbid, does this spell the end of the Coyotes in Arizona?
You know what? I mean, it's so hard to say because there have been so many times where we've asked, is this it for Arizona?
Oh.
There have been so many potential arena sites that have fallen through, so many master plans that have looked awesome on paper and looked awesome in the renderings.
Yeah.
And for one reason or another, they haven't worked there. I think, you know, at this point, this could be it. Now, I don't know much about this process, like how many people would be bidding for a big parcel of land that's worth at least $68.5 million. If it's an auction, obviously it's going to be more because you're going to have multiple bidders.
What would you put there if you bought that land?
That's what I'm wondering. Like, is it a different kind of like entertainment complex? Is it like a huge shopping mall? Is it just like housing? I have no idea. I'm not going to pretend that I know. But the fact that we have multiple big market American cities that are interested in NHL franchises right now makes me think that if this one doesn't work, it would be the time to go, right? So whether it's Houston, Utah, Atlanta, I feel is going to be expansion because, you know, like the Gathering at South Forsyth is one of the groups that would like to bring a team back to Georgia. You know, they're going to build a rink regardless, but it's going to take a bit of time. Houston has a rink. Well, they have an arena already. Utah has an arena already. And, you know, an owner in Ryan Smith from the Utah Jazz who's super enthusiastic. So it feels like relocation would be either Utah or Houston. Then just becomes a matter of, okay, who can do it right now and who is willing to wait for an expansion team 2-3 years down the line.
I keep telling myself that the NHL doesn't want to relocate for so many reasons.
Mm-hmm.
Number one is, you know, you don't get an Austin Matthews unless you have the Coyotes team in Arizona.
Totally true.
This has become Bettman's, you know, this is his Waterloo.
Right.
Where he's willing to kind of die on this hill on Arizona. He doesn't want to take the team out. But for every reason you just mentioned, like, when is enough enough?
Yeah.
It's getting to that point, I think, where even Bettman might even say, you know what?
I've done all I can.
Yeah, what am I fighting for here?
Yeah.
Like, there are some viable markets now.
Yeah.
And, you know, where's Arizona playing now? They're not in the Pacific. They're now in the Central, right?
Right.
So, you know, what team makes sense to, if you're going to have them in the Central?
I mean, Houston, that works. Utah's more west, obviously.
Geographically, I can see Houston definitely being the spot that they land.
Mm.
It's going to be a tricky one. I just, part of me just says, like, you know, Bettman is stubborn enough to make this drawn on, and you're going to get more money if from expansion fees rather than relocation.
Mm.
Okay, so Dmitry Kulikov suspended 2 games for an illegal check to the head on Connor Sheary. What'd you make of that in light of the whole Matt Rempe 4-game suspension?
Yeah, so Kulikov gets 2, Rempe got 4. I'm going to say Kulikov should have got 3. Because looking at the hit, it wasn't as egregious as Rempe's. Like, the elbow didn't come up in such cartoonish form. but his arm did come up a bit. And for me, Sheary was in a prone position. Like, Kulikov was coming from sort of behind to the side. Sheary was obviously looking down at the puck, getting rid of it. So it felt like a little predatory. I'm sure it wasn't the result Kulikov was going for, but felt like 3 games might have been a little more appropriate.
A little juice to the Battle of Florida here.
Certainly.
We didn't have this on this segment, but, you know, in terms of teams that I want to see play in the playoffs, I really want to see Tampa, Florida.
It could happen.
It's probably going to happen.
Yeah.
That Florida team is just nasty. I saw Paul Bissonnette from Spit and Chicklets talk about how Toronto was the toughest team in the NHL, and I'm just like, what? Are you kidding me? Like, how many guys on Florida would I not want to play against right now?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, and even Kulikov's playing like a fiend. Like, that's not his MO.
No, no, for sure. And the interesting thing, too, is something that people have noted over the years about Tampa Bay is that they're like the Hell's Angels. Like, if one of them if one of them gets into a scrap, they all get into it. Like, there's no, like, one-on... Like, everything turns into, like, a scrum or a line... Like, not a line brawl, but it's like, if somebody gets hurt, like, everyone goes after them. So imagine, like, Florida-Tampa Bay in a seven-game series where, you know, all those agitators on Florida versus a Tampa team that is, like, one for all and all for one.
It's a family, man.
That's right. That's, like... That's a lot of sparks.
Yeah, Connor Sherry's not even like one of the guys that they won a cup with.
Right.
And he's just like, no, he's one of us now. He wears the jacket. He wears the vest.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, he's patched up or whatever they say.
Let's go around here. Wayne Simmonds announcing his retirement. He's going to sign a one-day contract with the Philadelphia Flyers and then retire next month. It's a sad day because Wayne Simmonds is so beloved in the NHL. Mm-hmm. Do you think this is the last time we see him involved with the NHL? Like, what do you think post-career Wayne Simmonds does here?
Yeah, I mean, NHL, I'm not sure. Hockey, definitely he's going to stay. I can definitely see him staying involved if he wants to be. And I would say, if you are a subscriber to the Hockey News, go to the archive. Probably about 10 years ago now, Ken Campbell did a cover story about Wayne Simmonds and Anthony Stewart. Or no, it was Chris Stewart. Mm-hmm. Wayne Simmonds and Chris Stewart, although Anthony Stewart's his brother. So same upbringing, obviously same house. Just about the paths they took to get to the NHL and how hard it was for them growing up in the east side of Toronto, all the sacrifices that had to be made. So Simmonds, just a fantastic story. I know at one point he was going to go to the NCAA because free schooling. But OHL, Owen Sound Attack, I believe Mike Feuda was the GM at the time. He was like, come here. We will get you to the NHL. You can, we can still get you an education if you want it. But it happened, right? So really cool story. I think, like grassroots, what Wayne Simmonds means to the greater Toronto hockey community already, he would be just a fantastic ambassador, whatever he wants to do. And we've seen it, again, with Anthony Stewart, where he has his own hockey program, Seaside, where just getting more kids into the sport from diverse neighborhoods. I think that's something that Wayne Simmonds would be amazing at.
Yeah, I had the pleasure of talking to Wayne numerous times throughout the year. Obviously, he's played for the Leafs, so I covered the Leafs for a bit. But the place where I always got to see him was every summer at the BioSteel camp in Toronto, where he's working out with former Leafs strength and conditioning coach Matt Nichol. And you talk to Matt about who the strongest guys he's ever worked with, and always he'll say Wayne Simmonds outlifts everyone.
Wow.
And you wouldn't expect it, because if you've ever seen Wayne Simmonds with the equipment off, just in shorts, he's got
thin legs.
He's got chicken legs.
Okay? Yeah, it's wild.
I don't have big legs, but this guy's got like non-hockey player legs.
Yeah.
But
for pound tough.
Not even pound for pound tough, but like he out-squats everyone with those legs. So he is a freaky, strong guy.
Yeah.
And just, he was always a gentleman whenever you talk to him. He's always been
good.
He's involved with a lot of great causes. I think he won a lot of like community-type leadership awards when he was in Philadelphia. So good on him going back and signing a one-day contract with the Flyers. I can see him being added to Daniel Breer's staff. I think he's a perfect kind of, I don't know if he's going to be an AGM or something, but definitely part of that kind of management team.
Sure, why not?
Real quick, PWHL trade deadline. It wasn't as exciting as the NHL deadline.
No.
Our Ian Kennedy, our women's team site editor, broke the only trade that happened yesterday. I don't pretend to follow the machinations of the league, but obviously it's a smaller league.
Yeah.
We're not talking 32 teams, so it was probably going to be a lot less trades, but were you surprised that there weren't any more moves?
Well, looking at the rules surrounding the league, no. And it is the first year, so I can understand why they wouldn't have wanted a lot of movement. It's like, hey, we're just trying to get our bearings here. Everything's going really well. Let's try to keep the rosters somewhat solid. You know, they don't have minor league teams. They have like three players on reserve, so it's not like you can trade a lot of futures. I'm pretty sure you couldn't trade your first round pick either. And with the salary, you know, like with the salaries and everything, any trade had to be like a hockey trade. It had basically, again, you know, based on the roster sizes, it kind of had to be one for one or like at the most like two for one. So I'm not really surprised. Maybe in the future we see more trades. But I think when the league expands, which will probably happen, that's going to be where you'll start to see more movement, where there's going to be more stratification in the standings as well.
Yeah, like, and that's the thing. Like, aside from the New York team, which is, I think, 5 points out of a playoff spot, even then, 5 points isn't a big hill to climb in this league where you're talking 3-2-1 point totally. System. So, you know, there wasn't that divide between the buyers and sellers, really.
Yeah.
Okay. Coming up after the break, we've got New York Rangers team correspondent Stan Fischler on, you know, a team that, since February 1, has the most wins out of any NHL team. Stick with us.
Hey there, everybody. This is Ryan Kennedy, editor-in-chief of the Hockey News, and I have a new web column, Future Watch Weekly, that you should keep an eye out for. Every week, I look at the developmental world of hockey from NCAA, Major Junior, all points in between. So check it out every Friday morning at THN.com.
Welcome back to the Hockey News pregame show. We're happy to be joined by New York Rangers correspondent Stan Fischler. And Stan, these New York Rangers, I don't know if they're getting the credit that they probably deserve, but hottest team in the NHL right now since February 1st, 14-3-1. Basically been this way, I'd say, for most of the season. What are you seeing out of the Rangers right now in the second half as they prep for the playoffs?
Well, first of all, I want to say I'm predicting they're going to win the Stanley Cup. What they have is as great a balance as any team in the league. I defy anybody from any other team to show me that. First of all, they have two top goaltenders, and nobody expected Jonathan Quick to be as terrific as he has been. He could be a starter with a lot of teams, particularly New Jersey. The defense, although they're going to be short, two good guys, Trouba's out and Lindgren is out, but they have a lot of depth on defense, and they have four solid lines. They got good guys who probably are not going to dress tonight, which of course may be Rampy. I'm not sure. We don't know yet, but that may be. So when you have the balance that they have from goaltending to defense to the four lines, I mean, they've been winning games with Mika not even producing, and now he started producing. They're a wonderful team to watch. Now, I'll give you a for instance. They had to play a game on Saturday against Pittsburgh, and then they had to play an afternoon game again against the Islanders, and they didn't have a 24-hour break. There were no beefs about it. They went out and they beat the Islanders easily. Not that that's a great feat anymore. But finally, the coaching is good. You can say a few words in praise of Gallant, who did some nice things, but Laviolette has been around. He's a smart cookie. He's very calm. He's not going to get thrown out of a game like our friend in Philadelphia. So I don't see any weak spots. There's no weak underbelly on this team. And when guys get hurt, they can fill them in. They've been doing it all season. The only issue is going to be is if they find, you know what happened with Boston last spring. If they play a team that has their number, as the Devils did last year, they could have a problem. But I don't see it. I don't see a problem with this club anyhow. The only thing, you know, guys, as well as I do, you get hit with a big-time injury, then it's a different story. But right now, this is a team going to win the Cup.
Huh. So, Stan, you know, one player who has elevated his game this year is Alexi Lafreniere. And obviously, he was picked first overall by the Rangers. There was a lot of hype coming in. Took him a while to get into gear. What do you think's been the difference? Is it just maturity? Is it Laviolette, you know, deploying him differently? Why has Alexi Lafreniere finally seemed to break through a bit more this year?
I credit the high command. Drury, you look at history. I don't think you're as old as me, but I'll tell you that I remember when Jean Béliveau was signed by the Canadiens after starring in Quebec, Quebec Senior Hockey League. Béliveau was not a hit. He was not a hit in the first year, and he was a disappointment. And I remember when Tobe Blake took over, he said, "You got to play tougher hockey." And he his penalty minutes went way over 100, and nobody could touch Jean Béliveau after that. Same thing with Guy Lafleur. Guy Lafleur was not a hit immediately. There were issues with Guy Lafleur. Even with John Rattel, who's in the Hall of Fame. I remember John Rattel, I was covering the Rangers when John Rattel got sent down to Baltimore. We thought this guy was being would be nothing. So I wrote this at least a year or two ago, that this kid needs time. He needs time. You know, you move to New York, who knows what it's going to be like. And they gave him patience. And now he's playing like people expected him to play. And I credit Laviolette, I credit Drury, and I credit the kid himself. You know, it was a blend of three factors, and that's why. And he's going to keep getting better.
And what'd you make of the Rangers' moves at the deadline? Obviously, they got Jack Roslovich, they got Alexander Wenberg, and they add to the defensive depth with Chad Ruedel. Roslovich has seen some top line deployment now on the right side of the Rangers' first line, and Wenberg, I think, is what's centering the third line. Was that enough at the deadline? And do you foresee any sort of changes as Laviolette figures out how to deploy these guys?
The reason why I'm laughing is that I wrote many times as I watched the club that Drury didn't have to make any moves. Last year, he brought in a couple of big names, and we know what happened. It didn't work out because they disrupted the chemistry of the team. But what he did was he bolstered his depth. And the two guys so far have fit in very snugly, no problems. We'll see what the defense for the guy who's going in tonight does. But it was kind of move that a lot of fans didn't want, because in New York, you know, you always want a headline on this guy and that guy. And I got Kane last year and it didn't work. Tarasenko didn't work. But, the bottom line is it's not so much the headlines as it is the wins. And these guys have fit in it's like they haven't missed a beat. They're doing what they're supposed to do, sometimes a little bit better. And it's a bullseye move, no question in my mind. I mean, this is a better team right now than it was at the deadline because of these moves.
Excellent. Now, one headliner in New York is Artemi Panarin. We've talked a lot about the Hart Trophy this year. Is it Nathan McKinnon's year? Is Connor McDavid going to make a late run? But, I mean, Panarin's been pretty fantastic. How would you gauge his season for New York?
Exactly the way you are. I think he's a Hart Trophy candidate. He's been consistent. Where Mika hasn't been consistent, and he's just does the job. We call him the bread man, and he's delivered the pumpernickel. he's a guy. You know, there are a couple of people I know who, one buddy of mine, Sean McCaffrey, does a website, and he's got to prove it in the playoffs. Let's not kid around. Last year, he did not prove it in the playoffs. And by the same token, the Rangers are not being judged simply by the regular season. It would be nice if they finish first, they get the President's Award. That would be nice, but the bottom line is they got to go to the final. And I think they will. I think I expect a good season out of the Breadman. And I know that he's been thinking about it. How could he not? Because people are writing about it. But it's going to be, you know, when all is said and done, if he doesn't have a hot shot first round, then there's going to be there's going to be a lot of questions being asked. But right now, he's doing everything. You know, he's right up there for the Hart Trophy. He got some good competition, but he's done the job.
Well, definitely the pressure is going to be on the New York Rangers, especially after what happened last year in the playoffs. You know, follow or read all the coverage in the hockeynews.com. You can follow Stan and all his work at the Rangers site. Thanks so much, Stan. And coming up after the break, we've got Ryan's favorite segment, my second favorite segment coming up. We got Rapid Fire. Stick with us.
Thanks very much, guys. It's been a pleasure.
Hey there, everybody. This is Ryan Kennedy, editor-in-chief of the Hockey News, and I have a new web column, Future Watch Weekly, that you should keep an eye out for. Every week, I look at the developmental world of hockey from NCAA, Major Junior, all points in between. So check it out every Friday morning at THN.com.
Welcome back to the Hockey News pregame show. And Ryan, it's our favorite part of the show. Here we go.
It was rapid fire time. Let's do it, Connor.
Again, I still don't believe you, especially after somebody said that it wasn't their favorite.
Second favorite. Favorite is talking to Stan, okay? Nothing ever replaces that.
Yeah.
I see where I stand in your social hierarchy, Mr. Trakos.
He's a legend.
Sure. Let's go Leafs, because we didn't talk a ton about them. We got a little bit of Austin Matthews, but we got to get that Leafs clicking in. So Mitch Marner is still out for the Toronto Maple Leafs. If you were the Leafs, given that you're likely locked into the third Atlantic division spot, would you bring him back before the playoffs?
Okay, so he's got a high ankle sprain. You do not want to mess around with that. I would say you bring him back game 82, just so he gets his sea legs back, and then ready to go for the playoffs. But yeah, you're right. They're locked in, so it's like doesn't really matter wins or losses at this point. So give him as much time as he needs, and hopefully you get one game in before the postseason.
Yeah, you're not catching Florida or Boston for first or second spot, and you're probably not going to get caught by the Tampa Bay Lightning. So I'm with you both in the sense that, you know, what's the rush in bringing them back other than, you know, you just want to acclimate them before the playoffs start? You know, had this happened a few weeks ago, we might have been talking, you know, LTR until game one of the playoffs. Yep. Unfortunately, there's no benefit in that. The only benefit is just making sure that this guy's rested and you've got a healthy 100% Mitch Marner for the playoffs, which you're going to need.
Yes, you will. Sticking with the Leafs, one of their prospects, Easton Cowan, who's a bit of a shock first-round pick, is on I think it's a 35-game point streak in the OHL.
Yep.
How much should Leafs fans freak out about this? Because if Twitter is to be believed, they're really freaking out.
Right. I mean, he set a new London Knights record, and that's pretty impressive considering all the great players that have played for the London Knights, Patrick Kane, Rick Nash, guys like that, Matthew Tkachuk. I mean, it's a great season for Easton Cowan, no doubt about it. But, you know, you got to pump the brakes a little bit. Point streaks are kind of a fluky thing. The Knights are one of the best teams out there. But, you know, for me, it's like next season is kind of the acid test. Like, this is a player that I could see starting the year with the Leafs, you know, because he is a utility guy where you can play him up and down a lineup. Obviously, at the junior level, he's been tremendous offensively. But I would like to see him dominate the World Juniors next year, right? Like, this year was not a good World Juniors. for anybody outside of Max Celebrini on Canada. But I would like to see Cowan dominate. So I want to make sure he's there. But so far, so good.
Yeah, I'm going to echo what you said. Like, despite this point streak, and I think he's something like tied for six right now in OHL scoring, he's not going to make his career in the NHL as a top-flight scorer. One of the things our OHL site editor, Jolie Stockel, mentioned is that he's one of the best two-way players in the OHL. Mm-hmm. Seven shorthanded goals this season. So his two-way game is really going to carry him into the NHL. So this is a great sort of feather in his cap, if you will. But the thing that most Leaf fans should be excited about is you're going to have a guy, you know, if you're looking for someone who's going to play a shutdown role for you or just provide you a solid minutes and play that 200-foot game, Easton Cowan's looking like he's going to be that guy.
Mm-hmm. All right, so the next Mitch Marner it is.
The
Montreal Canadiens have assigned David Reinbacher to Laval in the AHL. What should fans' expectations be for prospects assigned to the AHL from Europe as we start to see more of them come to North America?
Yeah, they have to be tempered at the beginning because it's a totally different game over here. You know, smaller rink size where everything's faster. You got to make decisions quicker. It's more physical. No room to hide. So there's going to be an adjustment period, especially with Reinbacher, who's still a teenager. So for now, it's like, get your feet wet, and then I would love to see him in Laval all of next year at the least. Montreal has so many young defensemen as it is, and I know he's the new shiny toy because he was their first rounder and, you know, top five pick, but it's going to take time with Reinbacher. Let him adjust and let him grow.
So we're talking Montreal Canadian fans, and we're saying temper your expectations.
Yes.
Right? Okay.
Yes.
Good luck with that, guys.
Yeah, I apologize.
You know, the fact that he's in North America tells Montreal Canadian fans that he's one step closer to being in the NHL. I hear what you're saying, Ryan, but that's a tough sell to a fan saying,
right,
oh, just because he's in the AHL, temper your expectations and just you're going to have to wait a while. You know, fans can't wait to see Logan Mailloux after what he's done in the AHL. The fact that Reinbacher is now this much closer to playing at the Bell Center, oh boy, it's going to be a huge culture shock for this guy. And you know, he's got to get ready for it because, you know, when you get drafted by the Canadians, it's hype, 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 and even more hype. So, you know, we'll see what this kid is made of. But, yeah, it begins now.
Mm-hmm. Let's keep going prospects. We're getting into college signing season, our favorite time of the year. Are there any college free agents that you're intrigued by? We'll start with Mike.
I'm going to start because Ryan's just going to go through a list of.
I was
going to
say, I know the list, so yeah, you go. You
okay, start. So hopefully this guy is on your list. Maybe he's at the top of your list,
yeah.
But I'm going to start with Quinnipiac University. They got a couple of the guys, but the one I'm focusing on is Colin Graf. I think he's top five in NCAA scoring. He had a look last year with the Nashville Predators and the Florida Panthers. Looked like he might have signed with one of those teams. I think both those teams are probably kicking themselves because, you know, Colin Graf could be, you know, the new shiny toy, if you will. Let's also keep in mind, though, college free agents aren't that great. I know Brian Burke had a quote saying it's kind of like finding a wallet on the street. Sometimes it's got money, sometimes it doesn't.
Right.
Most often, it doesn't have money. All it has is maybe like a Subway coupon for
five
free subs or something.
Yeah.
The last one of worth was, what, Tyler Bozak? So, you know, Colin Graf's looking like he's going to get signed somewhere. I just don't know what his NHL future is going to be.
Yeah, and, you know, in terms of coming back this year for the Bobcats, I will say, you know, talking to scouts, they were saying, for him in particular, it was a good idea because he's always been a little light. But this year he's shown more compete, more battle level for Quinnipiac. So, you know, the scoring touch is still there, and that's his meal ticket. But it's probably a good idea for him. So maybe those teams will circle back, and one of them will get him anyways. I'll toss out a couple of names here. Luke Granger from Western Michigan is kind of interesting to me because, you know, again, talking to scouts, they say he's a feisty guy. He can be a rat if you need him to, and he can really skate. So he's got those aspects of his game where even if he's not scoring, he can be helpful to you. And again, we're talking about guys that are borderline NHLers, maybe just AHLers when you're talking about college free agents these days. So for me, Luke Granger, if he's got a spot where he can say, okay, I can be a bottom six NHLer, then at least he's got an identity. The other player I'll mention, and he doesn't have to come out this year because I believe he's only a sophomore, but Dartmouth has a goaltender named Cooper Black. He's 6'8".
Wow.
Yes. And obviously, you know, he's still getting used to being 6'8" and like 240 pounds, but the Big Green, I believe they need to win their conference tournament to make the Frozen Four field of 16. They're going to be in tough to do that because they would they got Cornell, and then they'll have to go through probably Quinnipiac. Mm-hmm. So Cooper Black could be available in the next couple of weeks, and I'd be very intrigued to see if he comes out and cashes in on the fact that he is a monster of a goaltender.
Do you ever get used to being 6'8"? I wonder.
I don't know. It's never come up.
Yeah. Unfortunately, none of us are that lucky. No. U Sports Championship wrapped up this weekend with the University of New Brunswick winning it all and going undefeated this season. Is there any other more dominant hockey program in North America than UNB's?
I'm going to say no. Like, thinking about even, like, different prospect levels, you know, even, you know, I know there's some, like, women's NCAA programs that, you know, like a Minnesota or like Ohio State or like Wisconsin that mm-hmm. always tend to be at the top, but even there they rotate. So other than the New Brunswick men, I can't think of anybody.
Yeah, it's a simple no for me. The one thing I would love to see is this team face off against some NCAA teams.
Mm.
I know you're probably going to get older players in the CIS or
certainly. Although you know, like if you're talking about like an ECAC team like a Quinnipiac, a lot of those guys are already 23, 24 years old. So
yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah, it would be kind of a nice little Champions League kind
yeah.
of
let's see what
matchup.
Happens.
Yeah, let's see exactly what happens.
Yeah.
Well, I got to shout out TMU because their students are the ones who did the broadcasts.
Nice.
Final question. Connor Unger, great name, who played with Brock this season, just signed an ELC with the Edmonton Oilers. Do we see more U Sports players signing NHL deals?
I can see a pro deals at least. I don't know about NHL deals per se, but you know, like AHL deals and stuff like that. Because if you think about it, with Vegas and Seattle coming in, that's mm-hmm. two more teams drafting every year. And yeah. It's still a 7-round draft. So you're trying to find more talent out there and you've got more competition. So I can see, you know, with U Sports, especially goaltenders, like Unger's 6'2", that's good enough. Especially with goaltenders that take longer to develop, and Unger did play major junior, just didn't have the stats at the time or didn't get the looks that teams wanted. I could totally see it happening. I mean, Logan Thompson, he worked out pretty well.
Yeah, it's difficult it's different in the in Canada because if you don't succeed in the major junior level, you know, sometimes guys are homesick. Sometimes it's just a bad fit with a coach.
Yeah,
you can go to Canadian university and continue a career. And you know, Darryl Boyce is a perfect example of that, where you know, came out of U Sports and ended up signing with the Toronto Maple Leafs, and you know, having a decent minor league career. Ended up marrying Gerard Gallant's daughter in the process.
Interesting.
So, yeah, but you know, probably not a whole lot. Like we're talking like NCAA level. There's a few kind of NCAA prospects that come out of there, undrafted players. Now we're talking U Sports. That pool is probably very shallow.
Yeah. All right. That's it for the longest rapid fire we have done today.
Nice. All right. Well, that's it for one of the longest the Hockey News pregame shows that we've done this year. That's Ryan Kennedy. I'm Michael Trakos. Thank you to NorthlandHockey.com and BetMGM. We'll see you next time at the rink.